You're listening to Marketing News Canada, Canada's number one show featuring the brightest minds in marketing, PR, and digital advertising.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Marketing News Canada, Canada's number one podcast for all things communication, advertising, and marketing. I'm your host, Ted Lau, award-winning agency owner, podcaster, dad, and big fan of Lunch Club, where our guest today, Chelsea Kane Macklin, is at the helm. Chelsea is the Chief Marketing Officer of Lunch Club, where she leads company marketing initiatives that drive brand awareness and user growth. Prior to joining Lunch Club, Chelsea served as Vice President of Marketing at dating and social networking app Bumble, where she led Bumble's global marketing initiatives focusing on brand and cultural strategy, international brand campaigns, always-on marketing, and integrated partnerships to grow the brand internationally. She helped the company launch its newest vertical, Bumble Biz, and developed go-to-market strategies for regions including Canada and Mexico, and scale from 10 million to 100 million registered users. Both professionally and personally, Chelsea has a passion for social impact and supporting women-led businesses, and is deeply interested in the socioeconomic and cultural forces that shape and form human relationships. In her spare time, you'll find Chelsea behind her favorite book, depending on the day, listening to podcasts, traveling, and on occasion, painting. In 2019, Chelsea was named Business Insider's 20 CMOs to Watch. When she's off the clock, Chelsea retires to Chief Mom Officer to her almost three-year-old, Quinn. Chelsea, welcome.
Thank you for having me, Ted.
Well, thank you. So you hail from Texas, is that right?
That's right. I'm in Austin, Texas.
Austin, Texas. How's things going over there?
Good. Well, sort of good. We just moved to South Austin, which we're loving. But we've got some sick pups and a sick chicken. So
and a sick chicken. That's right. You were telling me about your chickens. Actually, in the pre-call that we had, Chelsea was telling me about chickens have their own language and they have names for you. Is that what you said?
That's right. There's been some recent research that shows that chickens actually name their owners. And so apparently they have names for all of us.
And so do you know what your name is? Do you actually hear it?
Do you want me to do a chicken impression?
Well, we could do it now. We could do it later. But maybe we'll just get into the actual origin story. Maybe before sure. We get into the chicken name, sure. Tell us a little bit about yourself. How'd you get here?
So I've always been in startups or consumer tech. I love startups. One of my first gigs was at RewardStyle, now LTK. And that was right at the beginning of influencer, publisher, marketing in general. So over a couple years there, I built and then led what they called the publisher development team. And that helped about 12,000 clients across the world, ranging from small niche publishers and influencers, watch blogs, to InStyle or Vogue.com. And my team helped all of those clients build their brands, their marketing mixes, and provided monetization tools. So really cut my teeth hard on both digital and influencer marketing during that time. Had some wonderful mentors from McKinsey and Bain who really taught me to think about a business-first approach. So after my time there, took that and consulted for a bit, traveled. It was wonderful. And ultimately landed in Austin, Texas, where I found myself really lonely. I missed building a team. I missed meeting clients face-to-face. I missed building a brand from the inside. Our Bumble CEO and founder, Whitney, had posted something on Facebook, actually, saying that she was looking for marketing folks. And I had worked on a breast cancer awareness campaign several years before that with the then CBO, reached out, interviewed, and started with that team of about seven, about 2 weeks later, when we were working out of a small apartment in Austin, Texas, which were just the best days, so much fun, and ultimately built the marketing brand and partnerships teams over about 4 years. Like you said, scaled the community from 10 million to 100 million, launched over and over again in many different places across many different verticals, and had the pleasure of building a purpose-first brand, and was so, so amazing. I loved the experience, especially because it helped me sort of define my why and help me determine what was next. And so I think we talked about last time me really being passionate about the intersection of cutting edge tech, human connection, and then the potential for social impact. And a piece of research that I came across when I was at Bumble, it's called The Disintermediation of Friends. It's a Stanford study. And it essentially showed that since the beginning of online dating, interracial and LGBTQIA couples have skyrocketed in growth. So for all of the challenges that dating apps and sites have put into the world, there's also this really important aspect of social progress in skipping your existing bubbles. And so when I met the Lunch Club team, first and foremost, they're absolutely brilliant, wonderful people, which was exciting. And you always want to surround yourself with amazing people, I think, when you're looking for whatever's next. And was also just thrilled by what they were building. It checked those three boxes. Lunch Club is a networking platform that connects people via AI. So I like to think of it as engineering serendipity. I don't know about you, but I feel like every once in a while, either when I've traveled or even in coffee shops, you just serendipitously sit next to someone who can change your career or change your life or change something
absolutely
magical and amazing. Yeah. And imagine if you had AI that was powering those meetings and connections, making them that much better, that much more relevant as you scale. And even the like needle in a haystack comparison where, you know, the right connection might be an enormous pile of hay that is so hard for us to personally find people that are, you know, the right folks for us to connect with from a career development or just from a life perspective. And the AI helps you find that needle in a haystack faster, bigger, better. And so, yeah, that's what sort of brought me to Lunch Club and why I'm so passionate about both the team and the mission and the path forward.
Well, as a user of Lunch Club, so that's how I actually met you, is because I was so enamored by the app that I said, I got to reach out to Chelsea and see if I can interview her. The app itself has really helped me because as an agency owner, we were locked in Vancouver, right? That's where I'm based in Canada. And we wanted to grow into the West Coast US. And during COVID, I was trying to figure out, how am I going to reach my goal while the airports and borders are shut? And serendipity, like you said, one of my friends invited me to Lunch Club. And then I've just met a ton of great people on Lunch Club. And I found that however your AI does it, it actually matches up with people that I get along with. And I have great things to talk about. And in fact, I'm growing my network and in a way that I would never have expected pre-pandemic. So with that, how has the pandemic grown Lunch Club? Has it, or have you seen different challenges?
Yeah, we've actually seen 15x growth in the last year throughout the pandemic. And if you think about it, like with networking, people have traditionally been limited by geography, by socioeconomic status, by gender, generation, all of the things. And I think this transition for Lunch Club, being able to connect people virtually, is so groundbreaking because it makes building a network more accessible, more convenient, easier. And I think there will always be a blend of that need of both in-person and virtual networking. But I'm so excited that it feels like we've proven that virtual networking can be that much more impactful. So we were originally an in-person product, sending people to lunch to go meet in person. I think, you know, we're watching COVID change culture continuously and change the business continuously. And we've gotten requests from the community to bring back in person. So we're just sort of on a local level, on a city by city level, following guidelines and sort of thinking about when the right time and place is to open in-person meetings back up as well.
Great. Now, growth of 15x also comes with its own challenges. Can you speak to a bit of that challenge given you're in the C-suite there?
Sure. I think broadly, when Lunch Club first launched, it was out of San Francisco, and there was a ton of adoption from entrepreneurs, VCs, investors, startups. And over the course of the last year, that's, you know, the appetite for Lunch Club has grown and spanned across so many different other categories, which is super exciting. But it also means that it's a bit more complex to serve the community. So actually had the execs team here in Austin last week, and we did our planning for the next 3 to 6 months, which was really invigorating. And a big piece of that and a goal that I have and the community has at large is understanding how to better serve them at scale. One wonderful thing about Lunch Club is, like, unlike other platforms, as Lunch Club scales, the AI gets smarter, you get more relevant matches, where in comparison, you know, on other maybe social or networking platforms, as they scale, maybe your communication or connections get not as good. And so we've got this great benefit of the AI. And now from a business and leadership perspective, you know, taking some time to really understand our community and make sure that we're innovating the product to fit their needs and innovating on a brand and marketing side to ensure that our purpose lives through the product experience. And so, yeah, that's what we're excited about in the next few months.
And so are you planning to grow into other markets? I know that there were a number of international locations. I think I saw Bangalore on there, if I'm correct. But
right.
I'm like, I don't know how or what I would do to meet with someone in Bangalore. Maybe I should try it. But
yeah,
why did you guys pick those markets? And what markets are you looking to open?
Sure. So some of those have grown organically on their own, especially because, as you know, the tech community is so transient. So a lot of the sort of larger metropolises across the world, we do see adoption. London is a big hub for us as well. And then we actually do have a few folks in India where we're testing a lot of new things, just learning. We are doing a bit more from a marketing sandbox perspective in India, which I'm really excited about over the next couple months. And right now we're really focused on you know, our core markets and then experimental markets as well, like India.
So I interviewed a guy named Bobby Sawney here in Canada, and he runs an agency called Ethnicity Matters, and he talks about ethnic marketing and how that there are nuances that we need to be mindful of. And so you being chief marketing officer of a platform that's going to grow internationally, what are you learning when it comes to those cultural differences? You said that you're testing in India. What's different in India than maybe in North America?
Sure. Networking is different, I think, in every culture, every region. Yes. And actually, I'll give an example from Bumble. Bumble is a dating app where women make their first move. And so part of sort of my last couple months at Bumble was also thinking about our cultural strategy and the way that we were examining the status of feminism in different markets based on how we then position both the brand and the product. So for example, you know, in the United States and in the UK, intersectional feminism is really growing and is sort of the forefront of feminism in those markets. Whereas in Mexico and India, we took a really different approach. Mexico specifically was experiencing some really kind of scary gender-based crime. This was pre-COVID. And so the ways that we were thinking about building the brand and maybe customizing the product was very different. In India, for example, Bumble only shows the first letter of each person's name when you're connecting with them. And so a lot of learnings, I think, from that experience that are applicable to Lunch Club. And like I said, still very much in the learning phase. I'm in my third month at Lunch Club. So still learning from a cultural perspective. And like I said, focusing on core and looking at India and other really amazing markets as places to learn and continue to innovate on both the brand and product side.
Now, you touched on Bumble. I wanted to ask, I don't know many people that started. I think you had said in our pre-call, maybe you said it earlier, that you were the seventh employee when you got there.
Yes.
And how large was it when you left?
The team or the community was 100 million.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. And the team grew dramatically over those 4 years as well.
And so how do you handle that? How do you handle that? Like, because you were working out of, did you say an apartment or garage or whatever, but it wasn't, you know, that tech, ooh, fancy office with the beautiful ceilings and all that and the view. How do you adjust to that in 4 years? Mm-hmm. That's the span of an Olympics.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good way to put it. I never thought about it that way. Well, first and foremost, I think Bumble is so special because it is purpose-oriented. And so when you're driving towards a purpose that's a service-based purpose, and you really understand your target audience that you're serving, it makes a marketer's job, you know, 30 million times more easy. From a scaling perspective, you know, there are step changes in terms of what's the data, what are the insights that you need to fuel decision-making and strategy. And you need more and more and more of that data, whereas earlier, it's typically a bit more experimental, of course. And so over the course of the 4 years, yeah, a lot more data and insights orientation, still continuing the through line of purpose and serving a specific market. And then from a leadership perspective, of course, the team grew many, many times. Hire people that are smarter than you at specific things that, you know, for example, performance marketing is not my bag. Mm-hmm. I'm not a great performance marketer. But having folks on the team that were so skilled at performance marketing was super important, and giving them the space and autonomy to both make decisions and give feedback and help shape the overall structure is really important. So I would say, you know, hire really well. And then the over-communication aspect is really important, I think, as both the community and the team scales over time. Things change so quickly when you're at a quickly scaling company. And I mean, Bumble is no longer a startup, but things are changing and super dynamic, so that you have to create more space, I think, for communication cross-functionally, especially when you have teams in, you know, Australia or India, and you're in Austin, Texas. So you have to be able to communicate in a way that's also scalable for yourself and the team. It was absolutely an amazing experience. But yeah, I would say those are the three takeaways.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand, and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow. I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Do you have an example of how to communicate at scale internally?
Yes. So, for example, we would essentially redo our meeting and communication strategies every 3 to 6 months. So, you know, when you're scaling as a team so quickly, the ways of communicating, I mean, when I first joined Bumble, we were on text. And then we moved to Slack, and then we moved to more regular meetings, and thinking about both the channels of communication and the frequency or type of categories of communication. So it ended up being, I think, every 3 to 6 months, where we would step back and say, okay, what are the things that we need to change in order to work better as a team together? And here are the three new things. And it also helps to have a highly adaptable and wonderful team. I was very, very lucky to have that at Bumble.
And so that role grew from just marketing to really leadership.
Yeah.
Where did you get your leadership training? What kind of tips do you have for our listeners?
Oh, that's a good question. That reward sale LTK experience was really foundational for me. And I actually went to school on a leadership and scholarship and leadership and merit scholarship. So it's something that I've been passionate about for a really long time. But the foundation at Reward Sale and LTK had some both incredible mentors and really great leadership training over my time there that carried forward. I've had personally have had coaches from time to time, and then have invested in coaches for either individuals or full teams to help continually improve skill, off skill, basically, and improve communication. And it's always been important to me to create space for that development, because I think, you know, the more autonomous leaders that you have on a team, the more impactful and better that team can be, as long as they're communicating together really well and understanding the purpose and the audience and company goals.
You had said that you found your why at Bumble. Was that through the Simon Sinek exercise or?
No, that was more of a personal exercise that I did with a coach.
That's great. And then, so what did you discover?
Those three things: the human connection, cutting edge tech, and some form of social impact. And that's, again, why Lunch Club is so exciting, because it does all of those three things just as a product without me even being a part of it. The team has already built an incredible product that leverages cutting edge tech, that connects people in meaningful ways, and that unlocks social and economic opportunity. Economic opportunity we see in, I'll give you a great example. There's someone named Billy who is an amazing Lunch Club member. He's a CSO at Smile Group. And he told me that he couldn't imagine his life without Lunch Club over the last couple years. And so he shared three specific studies or examples with me. One example was someone that he met via Lunch Club and decided to launch a SPAC with in the last year.
Whoa.
Another is someone that he hired from Lunch Club. And then the last one is a friend who I think lives in Bali, and they just have become really good friends and they catch up frequently, I think every couple months. And he's got this new great friend. So that it's that engineered serendipity of, you know, finding value in these almost agendaless conversations, but unlocking really massive economic opportunity, just in that example, but also social opportunity. Like, when would you otherwise have a pen pal that lives across the world from you that you catch up with virtually on a regular 100%. Basis? So I think that's a really beautiful example of the impact that I think that Lunch Club can make and have at scale.
So you went from one purpose-led organization to another.
Yeah.
And you're a purpose-driven leader.
Yeah.
How do you get attracted to go to one to another? Because it's like, well, this is One Love and I got this other other one. It's hard to make that decision or make that jump.
Yeah.
What drove you to do that? How did you make that leap? Because not a lot of people get that opportunity to work at one purpose-driven organization. You get the opportunity to do multiple and you get that decision. So how did you make that leap, that jump?
That's a good question. I mean, I'm definitely, throughout this career, the pattern has been being attracted to purpose-led businesses. So it's a combination of being really excited about this new and juicy challenge of Lunch Club and telling the story of that purpose, because it's the first time that that's happened, right? Like the AI plus networking or the social community plus the social and economic opportunity. There's also a ton of like juicy research that we're doing now and we'll be doing in the future that will help, you know, validate that. Because right now it's a hypothesis, and I'm seeing it, of course, through the success stories and through the amazing, you know, community feedback, but we'll have data points to prove that in the future. So to answer your question, one, continually being excited and attracted by businesses and leaders like Vlad, our founder and CEO, and Scott, our CTO, who are both absolutely brilliant, phenomenal, wonderful leaders. And then also just really loving the stage. Like, I love the growth stage and I love the early mid scale stage where, you know, there's a lot of things that you can't anticipate, but there are beautiful solutions that come out from teamwork and beautiful ideas that can really change lives that come out of that problem, that like healthy, wonderful friction of scaling really quickly.
Now, in your bio, you also say that you are chief mom officer to the lovely Quinn.
Yeah.
And I have many a friend who, a female leader, growing their career, super, super capable, intelligent, smart, all that kind of stuff. And it's hard. to juggle that. Whereas, you know, guys, for us, and selfishly, we just, for whatever reason, still in society, we're not necessarily the primary caregiver. So how do you run not one, but two, three successful organizations and still do this whole mom thing very well?
It's a good question. And I don't know about well, it varies day to day, right? First and foremost, I have an amazing partner in my husband, Wilson, and I absolutely could not do work, mom, dog, chicken mom, all of that without
chicken
him.
Mom.
So first and foremost, he's wonderful. Dog is barking again.
And dog, what's the dog's name?
So that's Porter, I think. And then Chicky is also a loud barker. But
do you have more than one dog?
I have two dogs and then two chickens.
And three chickens.
Yes. And I keep bringing different animals home, and it's a problem. Again, bless.
Any horses or goats yet?
Not yet, but I have the urge, so we'll see. Bless my husband, Wilson, again. Do you want me to run it?
I think it's chill. I think we're just going to do this. And they're probably not even going to cut this and just going to hear this.
That's fine.
And think that it's totally cash. And right, that's
2021, right?
2021.
Yeah, exactly. This is the life we're living.
Wilson. Awesome husband.
Oh, yeah. Awesome husband. Like so great. Yeah. He owns his business. And he and I have both tried to allow ourselves both some structure and flexibility to be great in business and great as parents. And he's an amazing partner in that. And I'm so lucky to have him. We also realize it takes a village. So I've got, you know, my sister and her husband who live here in Austin, and they are such a gift. We have an amazing nanny, Angie, who's dealing with my dog right now, who's barking in the background. I have a absolutely phenomenal person named Hillary, who you've been in touch with, who helps support on the lunch club side. And I've got a ton of incredible coworkers, family, and friends who are bought into helping us, you know, be the best parents and leaders that we can be. So it takes a village, and
I think that's key. It's like to your success as a leader and your success as a mom too, is that you inspire and give, what do you call it, leaders a lot of autonomy, but you inspire them to, it's like you're raising you got a village at Bumble, you have a village now at Lunch Club, and you're doing that here as well. So that's kind of what I'm hearing. And I would imagine over communicating is something that you do as well. So what does that mean, over communicating? Because for me, when I over communicate, my staff kind of look at me and they kind of go like, okay, dad, like, it's enough. I get it. So what do you do that you're over communicating, but you're not like, I don't know, doing whatever they're doing or I'm doing that I shouldn't be doing?
That's a good. So in work, over communicating means, you know, you have the regular, you know, weekly meetings or regular stand-ups throughout the week. I've always been a leader who wants and desires the one-on-ones. I know some folks don't, and it's not helpful for them. For me, they're very helpful. And I think and hope for my team, they're very helpful as well. And just also making the experience fun enough that we could trust each other and have open lines of communication. So trying to bring, you know, some amount of play and fun into our meetings together, and checking in the good times, like when we're doing well as a team or as a business, and also in the bad times. I think, you know, it's really easy to micromanage or retreat during times of challenge. But I think if there's that like healthy empathy and ability to understand, you know, people where they are in the business, where they are, it helps to have even more effective communication. So I suppose I should say effective communication, not over communication, because effective communication is what makes it all work.
I'll take that. So Lunch Club, I'm on it once a week, twice a week, meeting different folks. And I never see any advertising. Yep. I never see any kind of retargeting or anything like that. So you did call it a hypothesis. And I would imagine eventually you're going to have to monetize. So is there a monetization model that we don't see in the background, or
Not yet. No monetization yet. I mentioned that offsite that we had last week, and we did talk about some experiments that we'll be thinking about and potentially running in the next 3 to 6 months. But no plans to monetize heavily right now or in the next quarter.
That's fantastic. So you basically just get to play, experiment, find a bunch of cool things that are going to work. That's kind of every marketer's dream, isn't it?
Yeah, that's why it's so fun at this stage, right?
Oh my. So what cities would you say stand out when you guys are trying to grow? Are there, LA is a big market. I think you guys are in New York and Vancouver. So which markets?
Yeah. So sort of the ones that you would imagine, New York, LA, Toronto, major cities in Canada, San Francisco, almost every major hub and quickly growing city in the United States, Canada, London. And those are the markets that we're really focused on right now, like I said, as well as some of the experimentation from an India perspective. But I think the exciting thing about where we are right now and what we've seen from a virtual networking perspective is that you don't necessarily need to be in a certain city or a certain location to have a really amazing connection and conversation. And in fact, some of the best success stories are folks that are connecting from totally different time zones or totally different cultures. So I think, my perspective has always been take a global approach and think about how we can, drive value from a global perspective. And if and when it makes sense to really focus on a localized approach, do that as well. But I would say we're at a phase in the business where, specific metrics, of course, are super important. But also the ability to connect our community across the world is really exciting and helps serve our purpose even better, potentially.
So our generation of marketers have basically grown up thinking, okay, let's go and look for purpose-led organizations. And there's really not that many. And those that might have it, nice and pretty on their website, but don't actually, walk the walk. So what advice do you give to those up-and-coming marketers so that they can identify rightly an organization that is going to align with their purpose and isn't just, doing it for PR purposes?
Sure. So much of marketing is show and tell, but I think businesses that are really purpose-led do a lot of show and not telling. So I think some good examples of that are also businesses where CSR is sort of built into the business model. Like Patagonia is amazing. And I think if you look at where the money is going from a business perspective, you can tell, okay, this is a business that puts its money where its mouth is from a sustainability perspective. Or Ben & Jerry's is another great example. I have a friend who just joined as CMO of GoFundMe, which is a great example of both a purpose-driven leader and a purpose-led organization. Musa is absolutely amazing. And I think that purpose-led organizations also attract purpose-led leaders. So Musa is a great example of that. But I think look at the business, look at where the money's going, look at the leadership and what their perspective is, and do some due diligence.
It's fantastic. And then when you are interviewing or talking to these leaders of organizations, what do you look for from the actual leaders themselves? Any personality traits that you find are common?
No.
No common, no traits or no? What do you mean?
I think there are like vastly different leaders who I think are purpose driven, and it really comes down to understanding what the company's goals are and their goals are from a long-term perspective or from a legacy perspective. And so that was something that I was really excited about when I connected with Vlad, Lunch Club's CEO and founder, and understanding that both his vision for, the purpose of the brand and the long-term impact of the business is really aligned with mine. And that made it that much more thrilling to join the team full time.
That's great. Okay. Well, just because I'm mindful of time, I want to get into a little bit of rapid fire.
Sure.
To ask you so that we can get to know Chelsea a little bit. All right. So you ready?
I think so.
Let's start easy. What's the first thing that you ever marketed?
Influencers.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Any particular type of influencer?
Lifestyle.
Lifestyle. Mm-hmm. All right. Favorite marketing book?
Growth Hackers, Ryan Holiday. Growth Hackers, nice. Ryan Holiday. Yeah.
Love that guy.
It's a good one.
One of my favorite authors.
He's awesome.
Night owl or early bird?
I want to be an early bird, but I always end up being a night owl. Or early bird, yeah. I want to be an early bird. And as you know, having children kind of forces you to be a little bit of an early bird.
There is no snooze button.
No.
Not yet, anyhow.
So neither? I guess I'm neither.
Neither. Are you a visual reader? Do you actually pick up the physical book or do you listen to audiobook?
I prefer to read, but I like both.
What kind of tunes are you listening to right now?
I've been really into, I love Motown. I've always loved Motown. Going back to that more recently. Yeah, I love it.
Favorite chicken? Do you have a favorite?
Well, Penelope is no longer with us, but she was my favorite.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
That's okay.
Are you planning to have more chickens? Because you have three right now, you said, right?
Yes, I have three right now. I think given we've just moved to this spot in South Austin, as long as I can make sure that they're safe and healthy here, then we'll expand the flock. But first, I have to make sure that we've got a good fence in and, you know, all the necessities.
Favorite carnival food?
Corn dog.
Favorite children's book?
Oh, that's really hard. The Littlest Family.
What is that?
One? That's real. No. I think that's what it's called. Hold on a second. Let me just double check. It's called The Littlest Family. This is about three bears in the woods. It's very sweet.
You don't have a little family at all.
No, I don't.
You have plenty of animals to keep you busy.
Okay, here it is. The Littlest Family's Big Day by Emily Martin.
Nice.
Great book.
Favorite snack after the bar?
Cheese.
Just cheese?
Just straight cheese.
Just straight cheese. You know what? I found out this is, I'm lactose intolerant now, but when I was in high school, I might have been persuaded to drink a little. And then one night I stole a block of cheddar cheese from a buddy's house.
No way.
And I proceeded to, I didn't know this, but this friend of mine, we were walking home and he's like, dude, you crushed that entire block of cheddar cheese.
Right? He must have now, felt you know, so bad. Oh, so
no,
sorry.
I felt great. But now I think that might have been why I became lactose intolerant.
When
you're a 15-year-old boy, as my martial arts instructor would be like, Teda, you can digest stones. Okay. He used to say that. I could eat anything.
But, I think I like him.
Well, you'd be surprised. He was pretty angry. Last charity that you supported financially or with your time?
Lebanese Red Cross yesterday.
Wow. Lebanese Red Cross.
I have some team members that are Lebanese that are in Lebanon right now. And so they inspired me to donate towards that organization.
Wow. Any advice that you'd give a young person starting out in their marketing journey?
Oh, read a lot, find a great mentor outside of your existing organization, and listen to TED.
Listen to TED. TED Talk? Not this TED. Hopefully not this guy.
This TED and this TED Talks.
Listen to TED Talk. No, this TED knows nothing. This TED knows nothing.
Agree to disagree.
So any last thoughts that you had around Lunch Club, Bumble, being a mom, whatever. Whatever you want to talk about.
I don't think so. Just thank you so much for having me today and honored to be on the show. I appreciate it.
Well, we're really happy to have you. Everyone, if you haven't checked out Lunch Club, please do. Great way to meet people all over the world. And like Chelsea said, sometimes it's agendaless and then you have this engineered serendipity. So thank you very much, Chelsea. Oh, one thing. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Obviously, I'd be a terrible marketer if I didn't say sign up at lunchclub.com. And then to follow us along, please go to Twitter, lunchclubai.
100%. Thank you very much, Chelsea. Thank you, everyone, for another great episode of Marketing News Canada. I'm your host, Ted. This was Chelsea from Lunch Club. We'll see you next time.
Thank you, Ted.
Thanks for listening to Marketing News Canada. For more episodes and other great stories from Canadian marketers, visit marketingnewscanada.com. All episodes are recorded in the Jelly Marketing Studio, thanks to our producer, Chris Penner, and editors Travis Jeffers and The Podfather.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.